Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in ESPN NFL analyst Mike Tannenbaum to our microphone. Mike, thanks for taking time to join us today. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you guys. Good morning.
Absolutely. So, Mike, what have you seen so far this year when you watch the Titans? What stands out to you about them, and where do you think they sit right now in terms of the AFC picture?
Yeah, I've been very bullish on the Titans. I've been very bullish on Ryan Tannehill for, I think, 5 years now. When I first got to Miami and had the privilege of running that organization, you know, the first thing I did is say, hey, we have to extend this player. He's underrated. And when he was healthy in Miami, people don't realize how successful he was and took us to the playoffs. And what he's done with Tennessee is not a surprise to me at all. And I think as long as he's healthy, they're going to be in the AFC picture to win, to represent that conference in the Super Bowl. With that said, I think on the other side of the ball, they obviously have some, you know, room for improvement. And I'm sure Coach Vrabel is working on that. And specifically, you know, you look at their pass rush that needs to improve, and the lack of pass rush has led them to being last in the league on, you know, third down defense, which is something that obviously they need to clean up.
So, Mike, back on Tannehill, there still seems, I think it's less now, but there still seems to be a lot of people around the league who, I think, look at his Dolphins tenure as a, I guess, kind of a big failure and are surprised to see him performing at this level. As someone who saw him up close for as long as you did, is there any surprise at all about the performance that he's had in basically a full season plus with the Titans?
Yeah, I mean, this is such an easy one for me, guys. Zero surprise. And, you know, for me, I literally put my money where my mouth is, because when I first got there and after running the Jets, he was dramatically better than any quarterback we had there in a long time. And I think one of the reasons he doesn't get the credit he deserves is he's such a good person, and he's a great leader, and he deflects praise and he accepts criticism, and he brings no attention to himself. But when you really study it and study it carefully, he's been a successful quarterback for a long time, and Arthur Smith and Coach Vrabel have done a remarkable job with him. But he's a guy that, you know, there's a great expression that applies here, guys, which is the tape sets the floor, meaning the baseline talent sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling. And Ryan Tannehill has a whole bunch of both of those things.
ESPN NFL analyst Mike Tannenbaum on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike, I want to ask you about Jadeveon Clowney. He's not been very effective for the Titans so far this year. Missed the game yesterday with a knee injury. When you watch and evaluate Jadeveon Clowney as a player, what do you see, and what do you think his value is league-wide at this point?
Yeah, I was bullish when they signed him, just from a standpoint of I thought he was a guy that could come in and give them, you know, 20 to 30 meaningful snaps, every game. And Coach Vrabel had success with him going back to Houston. And I would just give it a grade of incomplete thus far, and it's far from over. You know, we're seeing teams like, look at Seattle. They've added three good players on defense: Snacks, Harrison, Carlos Dunlap, and Jamal Adams. So team building is something that is evergreen. And while Clowney hasn't played well yet, I do think that will turn out to be a good sign.
So, surprise, Mike, about what happened last night between the Bucs and the Saints? It's hard for me, really, with both teams, to figure out what we're going to see from week to week.
Yeah, I was shocked. You know, two things that, you know, two stats that just unbelievably are shocking. One is that 12 different New Orleans Saints caught passes. That's hard to do in a practice. And Tampa Bay converted one third down, which, given who they have, I like, if I didn't watch the game, I would say, oh, that must be a misprint. So I thought going into the game, Tampa was one of the best teams in the league. I was shocked to see what I saw. I still don't know about the Saints, because I just think the field is compressed on Drew Brees. He can't get the ball down the field, and I think at some point that's going to come back to hurt him.
So, Mike, with that in mind, like you look around the NFC right now, and Tampa, as you mentioned, not a good showing last night. Seattle gets beat yesterday in Buffalo. As you try to nail down who the best team in the NFC is right now, what would your answer be? Who do you think is the favorite right now in the NFC?
Yeah, I really don't know, because there's holes. Like, Green Bay can't stop the run. Seattle can't stop anything. You know, Tampa Bay laid an egg last night. New Orleans has a very old quarterback that can't get the ball down the field. So I really don't know. It's really wide open, and the NFC East obviously is just having a really tough year. So I think this conference is wide open, and I think the three or four best teams in the NFL are all in the AFC, and I would certainly put Tennessee into that conversation.
Well, let's go to those contenders then. What did you think of Baltimore and what they sort of demonstrated at Indianapolis yesterday, a game that, you know, the Colts were in some level of control, but then Baltimore really turned it on, flipped it around. The Steelers have big-time trouble in Dallas, of all places, but find a way. I mean, how would you sort those teams at the top?
Yeah, you know, Baltimore really won on defense yesterday. If you look at that game, they held Indy to two third-down conversions, shut them out in the second half. Lamar Jackson's really struggled, which, you know, look, there's going to be growing pains with young quarterbacks. You know, we just talked about Ryan Tannehill and some of the inconsistencies he had at Miami, although I still think he played very well. Lamar Jackson's going through some growing pains. It happened. So I think Baltimore's as much of a defensive team right now as an offensive team. And Pittsburgh, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is an older, declining player, and he has a brand name on the back of his jersey, but when you look at it objectively, like, he got nicked up yesterday, and he's not the same guy. He can't defend himself the way he once did. So there's some question marks there. You know, I look at Kansas City, Tennessee. I see very few flaws, if any. Again, Tennessee, I think it's the pass rush. And, you know, I think it's Kansas City until someone says otherwise.
And to that point, Mike, as you look at Kansas City, I've been blown away at how good they've been for the most part this year. Defensively, is it possible that Kansas City is even better this year than they were a year ago?
Yeah, you can make that argument, because I think defensively they are better. And when you look at their defensive line with Chris Jones, Frank Clark, they have a couple of difference makers there. And the way they play so well on the other side of the ball, they don't have to be perfect. They just have to be good on defense, and they have been. And I think Buffalo is the other team that, you know, if Josh Allen has one of his days like he did yesterday when he's on, you know, they're going to be tough to beat. He's a guy that his A game is a high ceiling. He just has some accuracy inconsistencies that if I'm a Bills fan, I know it's going to happen. I just don't know when.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Buffalo, because they were such a story early. We saw them here, and they were just brutal that night, but obviously kind of strange circumstances. It seems like they went into a rut and then come out the other side yesterday and look great. Interesting kind of team that's hard to peg down, I guess, like a lot of them in the league right now.
Yeah, and I think what Buffalo does a really good job of, they don't beat themselves. And I've had the privilege, guys, of working for Coach Belichick a couple times in my career, and he really just talks about that, hey, guys, we don't have to go win. Let the other team go lose, you know, turnovers and penalties. And I think Sean McDermott's done a very nice job, and that's a very well-coached team, and they don't beat themselves. And if Josh Allen doesn't turn it over, they'll be a tough team to beat come playoff time.
ESPN NFL analyst Mike Tannenbaum on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike, as you look ahead to this matchup on Thursday night between Indianapolis and Tennessee, obviously a huge matchup in the AFC South here at Nissan Stadium, what do you make of the matchup between the Colts and the Titans? How do you think the Titans match up against Indianapolis?
I think they have a massive advantage at quarterback. I think Phillip Rivers is another one of these quarterbacks that, you know, if you took the name off the back of the jersey, you'd be looking at a guy that's old, can't move, and can't get the ball down the field. So I think for a team that struggles rushing the passer, this is really what the doctor ordered for Tennessee. I think what they'll try to do is, I think the Colts will try to run the ball. Jonathan Taylor's had some turnover problems, but I think he'll be a very productive back. And then, you know, on the other side of the ball, I think the Colts have a little bit of an underrated defense, but Tennessee should give them all they can handle, because – you know, when Tennessee's rolling, they have a lot of weapons, and I think A.J. Brown is somewhat underrated.
Yeah, we've talked about him some today, Mike. Where would you put A.J. Brown relative to the top receivers in this league. I don't know how, if you tier them, you know, I guess I made the argument he's probably a second tier guy, but moving up. But how do you think he rates among the best in this league?
Yeah, I'm really bullish on him because when a player can outrun leverage, and there's very few young receivers that can actually outrun DBs when they have the angle on them, like DK Metcalf's another one. And ironically, they were teammates at college. He may be in second tier, but he's closing in fast on the first tier. And it's interesting, you go back 2 years ago when the Patriots drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round. Imagine if they had A.J. Brown, you know, what a difference that could look like. So I think A.J. Brown is clearly coming into a number one. I love his work ethic. I love his toughness. I love his play speed, his hands. I don't think there's any holes in his game.
ESPN NFL analyst Mike Tannenbaum has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Mike, we appreciate you taking time to join us today.
Hey, anytime we can talk about Tennessee Titans, I'm all for it. I'm a big fan of the organization, and they've done a great job, and looking forward to Thursday night's game.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mike.
Okay, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
What do we make of what he said there about the Titans having a massive advantage on Thursday night at the quarterback position against Phillip Rivers? That's pretty strong words.
It is. That's a big word. I would significant, I think, is certainly fair, right?
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? He's talking about, you know, Brown and Metcalf. More and more people are saying, like, how does Ole Miss, you know, with Brown and Metcalf, like, how do they not have winning seasons? You know, Vanderbilt beat them, too,
yes.
By the way. It was
yes.
two years ago. A.J. Brown had
seems
nine.
Like a lifetime ago.
A.J. Brown had 9 for 212 in that game.
Yeah.
But 36-29 Vanderbilt in overtime. There you go.
9 for 212.
A little slice of history for you.
Oh, boy. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Mike Tannenbaum had to say there, including some interesting comments on Jadeveon Clowney. That's on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is the San Francisco 49ers taking on the New Orleans Saints. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff, so make sure you're tuned in for that. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Monday morning. Had Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN join us in the last segment and had some interesting things to say right now about the state of the Tennessee Titans. As you heard, very bullish on the Tennessee Titans at 6-2 right now in sole possession of first place in the AFC South, and also very bullish on the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Here's what Mike Tannenbaum had to say about Ryan Tannehill.
Is there any surprise at all about the performance that he's had in basically a full season plus with the Titans?
Yeah, I mean, this is such an easy one for me, guys. Zero surprise. And, you know, for me, I literally put my money where my mouth is because when I first got there and after running the Jets, he was dramatically better than any quarterback we had there in a long time. And I think one of the reasons he doesn't get the credit he deserves is he's such a good person, and he's a great leader, and he deflects praise, and he accepts criticism, and he brings no attention to himself. But when you really study it and study it carefully, he's been a successful quarterback for a long time, and Arthur Smith and Coach Vrabel have done a remarkable job with him, but he's a guy that, you know, there's a great expression that applies here, guys, which is the tape sets the floor, meaning the baseline talent sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling. And Ryan Tannehill has a whole bunch of both of those things.
So, Joe, what do you make of those comments there by Tannenbaum's talking about Ryan Tannehill, his potential here with the Titans, and also just maybe not getting the credit he deserves league-wide because of his personality and how quick he is to deflect blame onto himself and praise to his teammates?
Nah, I mean, that second part, I don't necessarily buy that. I don't know. I've never even thought of that. It's an interesting point to make, but I think a variety of different kinds of personalities exist at quarterback in this league, and the great ones are the great ones. I mean, shoot, Peyton Manning didn't deflect criticism. He screamed at anybody who ran a route wrong, right? I mean, just
yes,
like same with Brady. So I don't know about that. I mean, I guess he's an unassuming personality. I mean, I guess that's true. What's Aaron Rodgers' personality? Does he have a big personality?
Yeah.
Yeah? Does he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers is probably a little hard to play
for. I mean, I know he fights with – well, I'm just saying, even like just in general, like a personality. like
he's out there.
The idea is that you have to be a big personality from that comment to be like respected as a QB in the league, and I reject that.
No, I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I mean Brady's got a decent personality when you throw him out there. Rodgers does. I mean, Mahomes to a certain degree. So I hear what you're saying there, but
I just think performance is what it's
sure,
about,
of course.
Right?
So, of course.
But it's interesting, and what he says is consistent with anybody who was in Miami who was there watching closely. I think a lot of people were like, it was made sense to move on when they moved on from him, and it's a new era, new coach, new GM, all that stuff, new quarterback. Makes sense. But anybody who's down there was like, no, man, he was actually really good. They weren't great.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the same support he has here, but I'm not surprised that that Mike Tannenbaum would be like, oh, yeah, no, I knew he'd be good.
And also some interesting comments made from Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN on Jadeveon Clowney and maybe the prospects of Clowney improving as the season goes on. Here's what he had to say on that. When you watch and evaluate Jadeveon Clowney as a player, what do you see and what do you think his value is league-wide at this point?
Yeah, I was bullish when they signed him just from a standpoint of I thought he was a guy that could come in and give him, you know, 20 to 30 meaningful snaps every game, and Coach Vrabel had success with him going back to Houston. And I would just give it a grade of incomplete thus far, and it's far from over. You know, we're seeing teams like, look at Seattle. They've added three good players on defense, Snacks, Harrison, Carlos Dunlap, and Jamal Adams. So team building is something that is evergreen. And while Clowney hasn't played well yet, I do think that will turn out to be a good sign.
So what do you make of his comments there on Jadeveon Clowney maybe turning the corner with the Titans at some point and becoming a very good signing for John Robinson and the Titans?
Well, I have my doubts that it'll be a signing that will – I mean, we're halfway through the season. That will justify $13 million. But at this point, all that matters is can he get healthier and be better and give you something, give you disruption, give you some plays. I certainly think that's possible. Mike Garofolo had another report over the weekend on Clowney and talked about the possibility of a surgery. Now, it wouldn't necessarily be a season ender if he had it, but you know, we're going to find out again this week if he can get out there and play against the Colts. I think it would, for as much as the defense overperformed yesterday against a bad offense, they could use some Clowney Thursday night if they could get him.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And for the first time, I think you may be on to something with Heidi from Dixon being a burner account for Stillman.
Oh, boy.
Joe's Clowney needs to pay what he owes.
Oh, jeez. All right. The jig is up, Stillman. The jig is up.
Just admit it. How many times have we heard the pay what you owe?
Yeah, wasn't that like his Kyle Turris line?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, with Clowney, I'll be really interested. You know, we don't know how the rest of this year will go. And if he goes and has some monster playoff game, then maybe it'll come back around. But what's Clowney get on the open market next year?
I don't know.
Like,
man.
He had to settle for $13 million.
Reportedly being offered like 18 by the Browns.
By the Browns, yeah.
According to Charles Robinson, our good friend.
He turned down the 18 in the Browns.
Mm.
I mean, at what point does his price just plummet?
I mean, it's got to be – like, when you factor in not only his lack of production, but also, like, what the salary cap is going to look like next year in the NFL and how strapped teams are going to be to, like, make their roster work, he's not going to get paid hardly anything. Like, he'll get paid, like, $4 or $5 million.
I mean, that's probably about right. I mean, if the Titans had paid him – so they paid Beasley $9.5 million for zero. If the Titans – for what Clowney has done this year, which isn't a lot, but it's way more than Beasley – you know, $6-7 million, that would have been good.
I still think that may be a stretch right now,
well,
based on what we've seen.
Yeah, maybe. But no, Heidi, he's not my Clowney. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it, Heidi Stillman. Heidman?
Heidman.
Jarity?
Wow.
That was bad.
Yeah. That was really bad.
Hey,
Cladavian Jowney was better than Jared.
Cladavian Jowney has a nice ring to it.
It does.
I like that.
It does.
It's like his alter ego. Like, if he gets a sack this year, maybe it's Cladavian Jowney.
Maybe he can come out with Jowney on the jersey and flip the 99 around to 66 and just go nuts on people.
Maybe so. Oh, man. But I don't know. Like, his value league-wide, like, he is just – it's gone way downhill. And that goes back to what we were talking about with him to begin with. Like, asking for $20 million when you don't have the sack numbers to back it up is basically just absurd, in my opinion. But apparently it wasn't that absurd because Cleveland was willing to pay him $18 million. So I wonder how much he is looking back right now thinking, ooh, it would have been nice to be on the Browns making $18 million.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
messed myself up on that one.
Right.
Playing on the other side of Myles Garrett.
Right, exactly. You are like you're better supported with the other guys up front, but again, like he's been mostly single block this year.
Yeah, you know? I know.
And so I mean, it's not like I mean, that's what he would have been there too. He's being exposed as a guy who's not nearly at the value that he thinks he is or that some people thought he was. He's also not the worst player in the league, Heidi Jared. So we'll see. We'll see if he can give something.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in, says, Tannenbaum said the Colts will run a lot Thursday night. We have been so focused on the pass rush. How do we think the run defense is for the Titans right now? They looked pretty good yesterday in the run defense against Chicago.
They did.
I realize David Montgomery is not, you know, the best running back in the league, but looked pretty good yesterday.
He's not. But Jonathan Taylor hasn't been great. I'm a little bit disappointed in what Jonathan Taylor has been so far. It's early, but I really thought he might come out and just take over. I think if Marlon Mack were healthy, that would be a bigger concern for the Titans. They've got Hines in there. In fact, I don't think Taylor even led them in carries yesterday. So they've got a few different guys that they rotate in. But, yeah, that's a big, big
Wilkins.
Thing. That's right. Wilkins is a – yeah.
Wilkins had 11 carries for 39 yards. Taylor just 6 carries yesterday, 27 yards. Had the touchdown but also had that fumble on the play that Baltimore brought back for the touchdown.
Big play because I think it was 7-0 and the Colts were driving for more. So
yeah.
That's a big play. But, yeah, it's a huge thing Thursday night to stop the run and make Phillip Rivers – I know 3rd and 12 is like that's party time for opponents most of this year. But Phillip Rivers in 3rd and long – is a big difference with the way he struggles to put a lot on the ball right now.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have him in those situations as a statue in the pocket.
And to that point on the Titans rush defense yesterday, 20 carries for the Bears, just 56 yards on the ground. They did a great job against Montgomery, 14 carries and 30 yards and 11 of the yards on the ground that the Bears got came on that fake punt to Mingo. So, when you factor in, you know, the fake punt, it's 56 yards. Other than that, the Titans held the Bears to 46 rushing yards yesterday. Pretty good.
Yeah, that's a big development. And look, I'll say this about Clowney too, going back to that. I think sometimes some of their struggles, because that's something, again, the sack number was never going to be big. We knew that. But the run-stopping aspect was supposed to be a big thing with him, and I think some of their issues at times have been him being out of position too. So that's where when he comes back, you know, there's a defense and a system and knowing where your help is and all that stuff that they need him to be better at.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And when he does come back, what's the rotation look like at that point? Like, do you reach a point if you're the Titans where you go with 4 outside linebackers? Do you keep it at 3 and it's like Landry and Clowney and Roberson and you just rotate through those 3? That's going to be interesting to figure out once they come back because Roberson, again, I thought was really good yesterday. I think there's some ingredients there to work with him, particularly from a pass rushing standpoint.
Right. I think it makes sense. Yeah, you'd have Landry, Clowney, Roberson, the third guy, a guy who's in on passing downs. Unfortunately, all name team candidate Tazar Skipper still has not had – I thought maybe he'd have his shot, but Wyatt Ray got the call up before him. But hold out hope for Tazar Skipper.
Still, I mean, you got Tart in there. He's on the all name team,
Pierre
too.
Tart is – yes. Actually, some good alliteration with the help on the defense. Breon Borders and Tier Tart yesterday.
Yeah, pretty good.
Anytime you get alliteration.
We can all appreciate
usually
that.
Helps, yeah.
When we come back, we will dive back into the Vols and their disastrous loss on Saturday against Arkansas. What does that mean for Jeremy Pruitt and this Tennessee football program? Get your reaction as well. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Things are turning around quick in Fayetteville. Bailey, end zone, jump ball. It is intercepted again. Razorbacks with another pick to to seal it.
Four losses in a row. And do you have a sense for kind of where your team is at mentally right now? Do you have a read on that?
You know, I just talked to them. I told them, I said, I'm not discouraged. I'm not disappointed with where we're at. I'm pissed off where we're at, obviously. But, you know, it's like I told the players, you know, I've been a part of really good programs. I know how to get there. And we have to learn to play at a higher level on Saturdays.
That was Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt after a disastrous loss for the Vols, 24-13 against Arkansas on Saturday night in a game, Joe, quite frankly, that tells me exactly where the state of this Tennessee football program is right now. You've let a guy in Sam Pittman come in and take over an Arkansas program that was atrocious heading into this season. They were 2-10 in each of the past two seasons. They had won zero SEC games since 2017. And all of a sudden, in year one with Sam Pittman, Arkansas has come in, blew the doors off of Tennessee in the second half of that game, and has firmly established himself as a better program right now than Tennessee. It's an embarrassing spot to be for Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee entering into year three here.
Better program or program?
Program. Both.
Both. They're both a better program and a better program. Yeah, it's pretty pathetic.
That game Saturday night was just you start off, it's a 13-0 lead, and Garantano is in. You're running the ball fairly well in the first half. Then Garantano goes down in the second half. There's no answer at quarterback right now for Tennessee. Maurer came in. Tennessee was terrified to throw the ball when he came in. And then Harrison Bailey comes in, and you're putting him in a bad situation at that point. It's a mess right now at that position. It really is.
It is. It's too bad on the Garantano front because I really liked what he was doing. He didn't have to throw it a lot, but he was running a little bit. They were running well. I think they probably win the game if he doesn't get hurt. I know, like, Vols fans don't want to hear it. Yep. I mean, I get it. I'm just saying that is out of their control. What's in their control is having a guy like Brian Maurer able to play at all. Some of the decisions they made in the game, like let's have Harrison Bailey throw his first pass on a fourth down when we should have kicked a field goal, things like that. The whole offense right now is a mess. And the defense, I'm not seeing this defensive line renaissance under Jeremy Pruitt right now.
It hasn't looked much different to me. I know that. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Adam from Portland. Adam, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, thanks, man. I don't know. Is he really going to tie his whole tenure and legacy at Tennessee to this one quarterback? Because that's where I'm at, man. You had 2 weeks, a bye week, to get a different quarterback, at least teach him another play besides dump it off to the running back over the middle. That drive right there was the saddest moment of my life. And I've experienced a lot. So just watching him dump that ball off over and over and the game go away, like, we quit. We just don't want to get this guy killed. Like, that was so sad, man. You couldn't have taught that number one recruit something else, teach him a few plays, give him a few reps. I mean, there's no way he's going to tie his legacy to Garantano like that. It's just goofy to me, man.
Hey, thanks for the call, Adam. Appreciate it. I mean, I agree with what Adam's saying there. And look, I think people a lot of times jump the gun on quarterbacks, and they want Harrison Bailey to come in, and they want him to be great right away. And that's tough any year for a freshman. I think it's especially tough this year when you factor in COVID and everything that he's gone through. But I go back to what I said a couple weeks ago. With the way that this staff has developed quarterbacks that they've had with them, I've got big concerns about Harrison Bailey's future, because I'm not sure Jeremy Pruitt and this staff have what it takes to develop a quarterback. There's been no progression for Jarrett Garantano. There has been, I think you could argue, negative. I mean, Brian Maurer's regressed. He's gotten worse. JT Shrout's gotten worse. I think that is a bad sign for Harrison Bailey and his improvement. And I'm not going to write the kid off. He's got all the talent in the world. I've seen him play. I've seen some clips from high school. He's a really gifted player. But I don't have a ton of confidence that Jeremy Pruitt and this staff have any idea what they're doing at developing quarterbacks.
Right. There's a baseline. There's just the talent that a kid has, and then there's what the kid pours into it. That has to be a big part of it. Anyone who plays at this level and is going to be a great player wants to play in the NFL, a lot of this is on their own. They have quarterback coaches in the summer. There's a lot of stuff that's independent of the coaches. But the coaches get paid a whole bunch of money to take a guy and make him better. And, yeah, I haven't seen it with Garantano. I suspect with him it's a little bit more that his ceiling is only so high.
Yeah.
I don't know that I blame them for what he is. I think that's what he is. But Maurer, look, man, you could blame the kid if you want and say you don't study enough film on your own, blah, blah, blah. Where's the coaching? Harrison Bailey, it's early. I mean, but the idea that they could screw him up or that they could – not help him get to where he needs to get, I think it's a fair thing to bring up right now. I mean, that's based on what we've seen. There's some kind of dysfunction there at QB coach, OC, head coach, whatever it is, all of them.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in, says, wait a minute, Pruitt isn't disappointed? What? I'd be pissed off and disappointed if I'm Jeremy Pruitt. Those comments that we played heading into this segment about not being discouraged, not being disappointed, I don't even know what that means. Like, it's all starting to sound like a bunch of coach speak at this moment in press conferences. We heard that sometimes from Butch Jones as well, just not being able to read a room. We heard that only the closing the gap comments after the Alabama game. I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's done a very good job at being able to read the situation after some of these games. And quite frankly, I'm not sure if he doesn't understand or doesn't care, but he has to at least know where this Tennessee fan base is right now, and he is losing a lot of steam and a lot of patience with them very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's nothing he'll say right now that'll make anyone happy.
No.
Everybody's pissed off about the football enough.
But you can't say stuff like that.
Well, so what I think that quote was him giving coach speak of, like, we're still positive, we're on the right track, and then realizing, oh, crap, I need this other coach speak of, I'm really upset about this. And so he mashed two coach speak moments into one quote, and it all sounds dumb together.
I mean, it could be, but, I mean, man.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's sort of like, oh, wait, and I need to say also I'm really angry. I'm not discouraged, but I'm angry.
I'm not disappointed, but I am very angry. Okay.
What did someone say earlier? Like, he should have just given, like, a no comment. That's what he should do. Just no comment.
Just any comment right now. And then you've got the decision also to not kick the field goal. You're down 11 in the game. It's 4th and 4. You kick a field goal, you're within 8 at that point, so it's a one-score game. And the comments made by Pruitt after the game says they weren't close enough for the field goal. Well, so Maglia has a 50-yarder in the game, has a 48-yarder in the game, and what would that would have been? Like 44, 43, somewhere in that neighborhood?
I thought it was 42, right?
Yeah, and you're trying to tell me you're not close enough to kick a field goal? What are you talking about?
Right, he said that he's been banged up. He was questionable, but he did play, and he did hit those field goals.
Yeah.
And you have a freshman quarterback who hasn't thrown a pass, but let's call a pass play instead of cutting it to a one-score game. So is it just a math issue?
If that's the case, they got some real problems on their hands, because if your whole staff misses that, that is a gigantic issue. Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in David from Portland, who wants to weigh in. David, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
You're welcome. Lifelong Tennessee fan.
Nice, David.
To me, the problem starts at the top. Mr. Fulmer, why would you give a coach a two-year extension on his contract when he's not proven himself? Well, the reason for that is I hired that guy. He's good. You know, I ain't going to be no fool about this. Well, I ought to get rid of him, too. Now let's go to the players on the field. Can you name me any player that basically looks improved over the last 2 years? The offensive line still can't block. We get an All-American in from Georgia. Evidently, we've learned him bad habits. So, and the kick and the field goal, I mean, it's just a farce. I mean, you sit there and watch them and you think, the first half, we've got this solved. Way to win football games is you run the football and you control the clock. If you've got the football, no, the other team can't score except against us when we throw them a completion. And it's just, I don't know. If this quarterback that's a senior is the best we got, it's scary. Because, and if I'm Jim Chaney, if I'm an offensive coordinator on a major college, and I do not have faith in my quarterback to throw a pass on 3rd and 8, I better be getting me another quarterback on that damn field so somebody can help me win before I get fired. So, and we are building a gap. The gap's getting closer. We're getting further ahead of Vanderbilt.
Hey, thanks for the call, David. We appreciate it.
If you read John Adams' article today in the Sentinel, you're going to see that quote. He blasts them big time.
Hey, I love me some John Adams. Appreciate you calling in, David.
Yeah.
I miss John. Because yeah. John's not going in the press box, you know, this year. But, yeah, no, I haven't checked his comment. I'm sure it's
– I love the line there from David. You know, they're closing that gap with Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that there. I like it. I like it. Yeah, a lot of fair points in there. The idea, like, the third and long, and you're just – let's find a way. Let's figure out which draw play we're going to run.
Well, the other thing that's to me, problem. Like, the body language. They just looked – after Arkansas scored that second touchdown – they were done. And you could tell. I mean, you could feel the wave coming from Arkansas. And it's not like this was Georgia or Alabama. Like, this is Arkansas. And they've been a great story this year. You are still more talented, if you're Tennessee, theoretically, than Arkansas is. And they just got blasted off the field in the second half. And the worst part about it to me was you looked around and they knew they had no answer. You could see it on their faces. You could see it in the way they played the game. They were timid after that started to happen. I mean, that to me is the most discouraging part in year three, that you're still having some of those issues under Jeremy Pruitt and his staff.
Well, they're way more talented than Arkansas for all the people who are obsessed with stars, all the stargazers. Which, by the way, I wish we had Ubbin on right away. I'd like to have him on to talk about that Florida-Georgia thing. This crazy, look at all the stars on Georgia. Yeah. How could they possibly be better than Florida?
We'll have him on Friday.
Sometimes
you can rip him.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's not gospel. It's not gospel, guys.
When we come back, how much trouble is Jeremy Pruitt truly in right now in Knoxville? And how much danger is Tennessee in letting this season go totally off the rails? We'll discuss that on the other side. But first, I have a word from FanDuel. So you're watching the game and you see another ad for FanDuel Sportsbook and you think to yourself, is that legal here in Tennessee? Well, you bet it is. FanDuel Sportsbook is now legal in Tennessee. And let me tell you, it's been a really good couple of weeks for Robbie Stanley on the FanDuel Sportsbook. I'm very happy about it thus far. You can place your first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook risk-free and get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. Seriously, no strings attached. Just place any bet you want. If you win, you keep the cash. If you lose, you'll get your entire bet up to $1,000 back in bonus site credit so you can take another shot at the end zone on the house, just like I did yesterday. The Baltimore Ravens, +1.5. I locked that in on Thursday. They got the job done, a 2-touchdown win yesterday in Indy, so I was very happy about that. And with the FanDuel Sportsbook, generous risk-free bets are just the beginning. They've got a simple app, live betting on every game, and exhilarating bet types such as same-game parlays, where you combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay. And once you win on FanDuel Sportsbook, they get you your winnings in as little as 24 hours. And the best part about that, very easy to use. The withdrawals are very fast. You get your money very, very quickly. So to claim your risk-free bet, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and be sure to sign up with promo code ROB. That's R-O-B, so they know that I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Vols and the disaster of a weekend after a 24-13 loss to Arkansas on Saturday. Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sam texts in, says, with Tyler Bray, Chaney threw the ball almost over 500 attempts. He had 2 1,000-yard rushers in 2018 and still threw it 350 times. Chaney likes to throw the ball around. There's no way he just forgot how to call plays. Maybe it's just the quarterback, but something has to give. I would rather Tennessee lose 52-45 and be fun rather than looking completely inept.
Okay. Well, they're not scoring 45 in any run, pass, quick kick, reverses. They're not scoring 45 with this offense as constructed, which has got to be somewhat on him, somewhat on the personnel. You play to your strengths, though, as an OC. I mean, I covered Jim Chaney in the Big Ten when that's all they did was throw the ball. They had Drew Brees. You know, they had this new thing called a spread offense that Joe Tiller brought from Wyoming. He has also been accused of being too conservative by Georgia fans before
that
this,
was,
right?
That was the thing you heard when Tennessee snatched him away from Georgia. Georgia fans were like, well, that guy, anyway, he's too conservative anyway. Good riddance.
Now, was he too conservative, or is Jake Fromm a limited quarterback?
Yeah.
I think Jarrett Garantano Tano is definitely a limited quarterback.
Yes.
All that said, Jim Chaney deserves a ton of heat for this. I mean, it's a bad-looking offense.
Very bad.
It's very pedestrian, and they have too many good players for it to look like this.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Chad from Hendersonville. Chad, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, fellas, good stuff. My pleasure. And I want to talk a little bit about this UT game and specifically. Now, I played quarterback in college, and I view the game as a quarterback, and that's how I view time management and attacking not only the defense but the whole game scenario. And in this situation, I just feel like, and I don't know Pruitt, I don't know his mentality when it comes to this, but in this situation, even in the very last minute, you've got to get your ball. You got to get that ball down to the 25-yard line, even if it's with 10 seconds left in that game, and get the field goal team on, and get a field goal, and then all of a sudden you're setting up. You got a little momentum. You're setting up for an onside kick, and you got a chance at a Hail Mary. Now that may sound crazy, but you have it's a mentality of playing to win. No matter how bad things go, you have to have a scenario where there's still an opportunity to win this game. And they had that opportunity not only in that last minute, but what was it, 3 or 4 minutes they had the opportunity to bring the field goal unit in and kick a field goal. You have momentum then. Now you have a one-score game, and you can tell your sideline, hey, it's a one-score game. I know it's been bad, but now the pressure is on the other side because we've played terrible, and there's 2 minutes left in this game, and it's a one-score game. Anything can happen, and that's what's missing in this football team is this idea of we're going to play to win no matter what goes on, and that can change the season around. And I just was really disappointed that they had no effort to go after the win. Does any of that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great point, Chad. Appreciate you calling in here. I mean, that goes back to what we were talking about. I think everything Chad brought up there is totally valid, and that goes back to it just looks like to me, with this group, that the minute something bad starts to happen with the Vols out there, there's no pushback. They just fold up like a cheap suit. And it's funny because that wasn't really happening last year at the end of the season. They had moments where things went poorly, and they were able to get back in games and fight and win games. Now, I realize, you know, Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina at that time, I mean, not really the most talented teams that you're going up against. So I understand that. There's a difference between that and Alabama and Georgia.
But neither is Arkansas.
Exactly. And it just seems like now, the minute things start going wrong for Tennessee, like when Arkansas scored that first touchdown, you could see the, oh, no, here we go again. And it just snowballed from there.
Yeah, and I think certainly coaching deserves blame for that. I also think you miss a guy like Juwan Jennings.
Yeah.
Maybe a guy like Daniel Batuli. There were some seniors on that team last year who were very important, I think, in the whole turnaround in the locker room and probably on the field during these games. So I think there's a little bit of a void there. I mean, Garantano has so much of his own stuff to worry about. He's not, you know, I mean, he's got to worry about his own performance week to week. Who's that guy? I think To'o is a leader and a great player, but it's one guy. Who else? Who else?
Trey Smith?
Yeah, Trey Smith is, I think, yeah. I mean, Trey Smith tries to get guys fired up. He's a great player. But they don't have enough.
No.
They don't have enough. But, again, it's kind of a split. I think that's also coaching. And to Chad's point there, that's also just situational, just bad decision-making at those times.
Yeah. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in, aside from the winning streak last year at the end of the season, what has been good about Jeremy Pruitt?
The blowout of or convincing win over the best Kentucky team in, you know, decades, his first year. The win at Auburn his first year. The winning streak last year. It's been more bad than good now, I'd say, because of the way this is flipped.
Yeah.
It was looking pretty good when that winning streak was going and they were 2-0 this year. And they were 2-0 up at half at Georgia.
Yeah.
And it really is like someone's just pulled the rug out.
It is. It's been incredible to watch what's taken place since then. And as you would expect, I mean, after the game Saturday, a ton of Tennessee fans, I mean, they're out on Jeremy Pruitt. And I realize Tennessee, there's a very volatile fan base there. There's a fan base who's got some scars to them. They've seen a lot in the last 12 years. And it's easy, I think, to just kind of pull the plug and say, all right, this isn't going to be the guy. But I'll be honest with you, like, based on what Sam Pittman did to them on Saturday night, and just based on this being the third year and you're still having some of the same problems, I just don't think Jeremy Pruitt's the guy for this job. I don't. Now, the problem is there's nothing you can do about that right now because you just gave him a contract extension. He's not going anywhere. He's not getting fired this year unless it just goes, I mean, totally off the rails where they're 2-8 and it's bad 2-8. Like, you're just getting killed. Like, you lose by 2 touchdowns to Vanderbilt. Like, maybe. But even with that, like, the money just doesn't make sense to fire him now because of the extension, because of the buyout, and because of the lack of revenue that you have this year from COVID and all the money you've lost there. So, no, I don't think Jeremy Pruitt is the guy for this job. But I don't know what you do at this point about it because he's not going anywhere.
So you've changed from the beginning of the show. You said if he loses to Vanderbilt, he should be fired, but now by 2 touchdowns. So if he loses a close game to Vanderbilt, you'd keep him in the job.
I would fire him, but I'm just telling you that they're not going to.
Yeah.
You go 2-8 and you lose to this Vanderbilt team, yeah, you need to be fired. But they're not going to because it doesn't make any sense money-wise.
So you don't think there's any scenario? I mean, again, this is just on-the-field failures. I mean, yeah. Obviously anything off the field would be different, but no scenario – a football disaster that could get him fired.
I don't think so. I don't think there's a way he gets fired this year. I mean, do you? Like, do you think there's any way they pull the trigger on
that? I would guess no. I would think no if I had to guess. Yeah, because, like you said, the financial realities, and again, it's also Fulmer admitting that he botched this. When it's the AD who hired you, that gives you way more security.
Yeah, and look, I mean, maybe some people think we're rushing to judgment too fast on Jeremy Pruitt, and maybe we are. I don't know. At this point, you're 3 years in. How often, if you're not seeing signs of improvement 3 years in, does it work out down the line? I mean, I'm sure you can point to some examples, but not very often. Like, if you're not seeing improvement by this point, which I would argue right now you're not, how often does that end up working out in the long run? I mean, I just the way college football works, things turn around relatively quickly if they're going to end up going the right way.
Right. And again, with Pruitt, the accumulation of staff changes looks worse and worse. Okay, so let's take a guy like Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Again, the Michigan-Tennessee comparison. He's changed so many assistants, and you're seeing, like, it's hard to build something strong if you are constantly changing jobs and moving people in and out, or if you're tough to work for. And I think with both of those guys, that's part of this too. And that is also part of this that gives you pessimism moving forward. Like, who is your staff? What are you doing? What do you believe in? I mean, if Harrison Bailey develops into a great player, then maybe next year they can start turning this thing around. But how much confidence do you have in that right now?
Not a ton. Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, UT will struggle to be bowl eligible this year. Well, the good news for them is everyone is bowl eligible this year. If they're like 2-8, 3-7, you think they get in the bowl?
Is there any way?
Just because they're Tennessee.
Since it's a weird year, is there any way we could just have a UT Vandy rematch in the Music City Bowl?
Oh, man.
Like, just chuck all the rules out and have those guys play again?
How do you think that would go?
Oh, man.
Like, Drew texted in on our text line earlier saying right now, like, a bowl projection has them playing Iowa State. Like, how are you doing bowl projections right now with what's going on out there? Like, what's the formula for the bowl projection this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they keep canceling bowls, too.
I know. So, I mean, you won't have to worry about Tennessee not being eligible, but, man, what a disaster it's been.
But you might wish they were.
You might wish they were. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow to discuss it all, break down the Titans looking ahead to Indianapolis this week. That's next. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. ESPN 102.5, The Game.